Oh, such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Shop Blinds.com right now and get up to 40% off select styles, plus a free professional measure and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 40% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Hey, football fans, for those of you who can't get enough Baldy's Breakdowns, be sure to subscribe to Brian Baldinger's The Best Football Show. New episodes drop Monday through Friday where Baldy breaks down the best games of the week. Be sure to subscribe to The Best Football Show on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
Praise you like I should. High noon in the District of Columbia. Trying to figure out the Commanders coordinator's schedule. We're working on that. We're working for you. Right now, we're excited to get Frank Schwab on the phone. You can follow him at Yahoo Schwab. Frank covers the hell out of the NFL, sports betting, all that good stuff. Frank, what's up, man? Happy holidays to you.
Yeah, happy holidays to you guys.
Some really boring football yesterday. A couple of ass kickings. I contend that the elite teams in the AFC, I think you go Kansas City, Buffalo, Baltimore, have kind of separated themselves maybe from the rest of the NFL, but certainly the rest of the AFC. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, it's tough to disagree with that. Pittsburgh was up there, but they've just fallen apart on offense the past few weeks, so it's harder to trust them. And, you know, they're probably going to be a wild card team at this point. They've lost control of the division. I assume Ravens clinch that next week. So, yeah, those are your three teams. If it's anybody other than them, I'd be pretty surprised in the Super Bowl, because you're just getting elite quarterback play from all three of those teams. And even if Mahomes hasn't been, you know, lighting up the stat sheet this season, he's still Patrick Mahomes, and we saw it yesterday with some of those throws he makes, just ridiculous. So, yeah, I think Baltimore's really worked itself into the conversation. I wasn't on the Baltimore train, you know, 6 weeks ago or so. Their defense was just not good enough, but that has completely changed. Their defense, I mean, not that C.J. Stroud's having a great season or anything, but they completely shut that offense down. And all of a sudden, Lamar, Derrick Henry, that offense was good all season. They were going to be there. It's just a matter of could the defense kind of match it. And I think the answer now is yeah. The defense is there. The defense is at a championship level now, and where it wasn't early in the season. So that's the difference for them. And then, but the question is just, look, who's going to win at Arrowhead Stadium in January? They have two home games for a Super Bowl, and I don't think many people outside of Missouri and Kansas are rooting for it, but the Chiefs are just going to go to another Super Bowl, right? It just seems inevitable. It just seems like, who could possibly beat this team? I don't have anything against Kansas City. I like a lot of their people. I like their quarterback. I like the coach. All this stuff, but I just want some new blood in the Super Bowl, and I don't think we're going to get it. I think this is just how do you beat the Chiefs at this point?
You mentioned C.J. Stroud. He has really struggled this season. What's going on with him? Is it something where it's just a second-year slump and then he'll get back in the saddle in the third year? Is the O-line the big problem, some of the injuries with the receivers? What's been the issue with C.J. Stroud this season?
I think it's been a little bit of everything, and that's, you know, I mean, kind of a obvious answer when everything goes wrong, but I think it starts with the offensive line. Even though they had a ton of injuries on the offensive line last season, it didn't seem like it mattered too much. They were still fine. This season, they're not fine. I mean, CJ's got a guy in his lap just about every play. So, you know, I think play calling has been a lot more poor. I mean, Bobby Slowick was kind of the boy genius last year, right? Everybody, oh, he's going to get a head coaching job, this and that. I just, look at it. They had a goal-to-go situation yesterday. That was just awful. Like every play they called was just like, what are you guys doing here? So I don't think Bobby Slowick is helping at all. He's kind of had a sophomore slump too. Losing receivers hasn't helped. I mean, he came in figuring on Stephon Diggs, and, you know, I mean, Nico Collins has been hurt during the season. Obviously, Tank Dell, we saw his season-ending injury, so that hasn't helped. And then a lot of CJ. I just think he's a less confident quarterback this season. I think that he's handled the pressure a lot worse this year. He just looks indecisive, and I think he's going to be fine. Like, you don't have a rookie season like that and just kind of fall off the map. He's probably the best rookie quarterback I've ever seen, although a year later, maybe somebody else has taken that mantle. But I have a hard time believing C.J. Stroud is not going to be a star in this league based on how good he was as a rookie. But this season has been rough. I mean, it is just the wheels have just kind of fallen off. He's just kind of a shell of what he was last year. And I really hope he rebounds because he's an easy guy to root for. You always root for good quarterback play in the NFL. But, yeah, he's got to kind of go back to the drawing board in this offseason.
Talking with Frank Schwab here from Yahoo Sports. It's funny, you mentioned something there that everybody thought C.J. Stroud was the best a rookie could be last season. And Jaden Daniels this year, I would argue, has surpassed that. Now, Houston did win a playoff game last year, which is going to be a big factor in how we remember Stroud's rookie season. What do you think of the level Jaden's playing at?
It's unbelievable. It really is. I mean, you knew that. Look, if you can dominate the SEC, you can come in and do pretty well in the NFL. Like, we all know, the SEC has... It's the NFL's JV at this point. The way they recruit, the guys they get, the coaches, everything. It's a different step up from... Look, I'm a Big Ten guy, but I can admit, the SEC is a step up from everything else. And he just absolutely, positively dominated the SEC. So you're like, okay, he has a chance, but to this level? No, nobody. I love the Commanders in the offseason. Like, I thought they were going to be a playoff team. I really did. You can go back. There's receipts.
But I think you were on with us saying good. That.
Anybody I was on with, I was saying, you know, everybody asked in the offseason, who's your surprise team? Who can? And I said the Commanders, and I said you guys, and everybody else was like, wait, the Commanders? What? And I said, yeah, because this kid, they got a quarterback, is going to be a game changer. But even that optimism, I didn't think he'd be that dude throwing five touchdowns and leading a comeback win over the Philadelphia Eagles, who have, by the way, had the best defense of football over the last month or two. I mean, he is just so refined. He's so far ahead of almost every rookie quarterback we've seen as a passer. And then you add on the fact that he's going to break RG3's rushing record for a rookie quarterback. It's just remarkable. I don't want to be negative here. I don't think his Commanders roster is very good. I think even most people would agree with that, right? Like,
yes,
there's
they got
so
us.
Many flaws in this roster that they're so far ahead of schedule, basically. But it's just that dude is so good already as a rookie that if they're at 10 wins, they're going to go to the playoffs. They're dangerous out in the playoffs. And then you go into the offseason and let Adam Peters do his thing because you got a ton of cap space. You got the draft picks. You're going to improve that roster. So, yeah, I can't say enough about Jaden Daniels. I mean, it's not just who's the rookie of the year. Look, I'm based in Colorado. I've heard a lot of, hey, Bo Nix is really the rookie of the year. No, he's not. No. Bo Nix is a good rookie quarterback. Jaden Daniels is a historic rookie quarterback. And, I mean, he's closer to getting MVP votes than he is to losing rookie of the year. So, I can't say enough about him. He's been a treat to watch, just a thrill. I hope he stays healthy. That's always a key to this thing, especially with a dual threat guy. But, yeah, credit to him for putting in the work to be great. Credit to the Commanders for coaching them up. Everything about it is just awesome to watch.
Sunday Night Football is going to be a matchup of rookie quarterbacks. Obviously, Jaden Daniels on Washington and Burgundy and Gold. Michael Penix making his second start. What'd you make of his debut, and what more does he bring to the offense that Kirk couldn't?
I just think it Kirk looked slow, old. I mean, we forget. Tom Brady screwed this whole thing up because he was balling out at 45 years old, and everybody said, well, then everybody else can ball out till they're 40. And that's just not the case. He was just one of one. Tom Brady's just a freak. Like, he's just like LeBron. Like, it's just one of those things that just is hard to replicate. So, you know, when Kirk Cousins was 36 coming off Achilles, I think everybody was just like, oh, well, the new, you know, 45 is the new 40 and all this kind of stuff. And it's not. We just saw a guy, the age curve just hit him hard. And so, you know, I think Michael Penix just gives them a little bit more of just competent quarterback play. And I hate to say that about Kirk because I think he's had a good career. I really do. I'm not one of these guys that bashes Kirk Cousins. But I think it was just over for him. Everything looked slow, and the ball's coming out slow, and everything. You just didn't have the quick twitch you need sometimes. And I think Penix just gives him a little more juice. He played really, really well. The stats don't really show it. He had a lot of drop passes. It wasn't lighting it up. He wasn't Jaden throwing five touchdowns, right? But when you watch him, you're like, wow, he looks really good. And you forget that Michael Penix played a lot of college football. He's an experienced guy. I think that's a big look. We're right now, it never happens that you hit more than really 50% of the first round quarterbacks, right? Like, it's just, you're lucky if six were drafted, you get three good ones out of it, right? Right now, we're 5 of 5, and we haven't seen J.J. McCarthy. And I think a big part of that is the experience, the COVID year, NIL keeping guys in school an extra year. These guys have played a ton of football, and so when you watch Michael Penix, you say, well, he doesn't look like a rookie, really, because he's played a ton of high-level football. Maybe not NFL football, but he knows what he's doing. He's really, really smart. He's mobile enough to make plays that way. And I was pretty impressed with how calm he was. Now, look, he did against the Giants. Does that really count? I don't know. But I think Penix is, from everything you could see in his first NFL start, you say, yeah, he's probably going to be a pretty good one, too.
Yeah, I like Penix. I liked him a lot coming out. I remember David Aldridge. The Skins played in Seattle last year, and the Washington Huskies were home against Utah, and a bunch of us went to the Washington game before the Saturday, and which is an incredible stadium, by the way. But as we were watching, I remember David Aldridge said something to the effect of, you know, all these draft experts keep telling me that these other guys are better, and all this kid does is just keep throwing bombs. Yeah. And I just – Penix is a player. I like Washington in this spot. I just don't know that the Atlanta offense can just keep coming the way Washington does. But then if you look at the rosters on paper, Bijan, Pitts, London, like Atlanta should be – really moving the ball, and it just hasn't really worked so far.
Yeah, and I mean, if you're a Washington fan, you wish you would have caught Atlanta a couple weeks ago, because I think they're a better team right now with Penix. And again, I'm not trying to just, you know, bash Kirk because he doesn't deserve that for the career he's had, but you could just see a different tempo. You could just see they're just playing at a different level with Penix last week, and probably a lot of confidence. Like, hey, like this guy is doing. Like, they're not gonna say it out loud, but probably, hey, looking around, like, this kid's doing some things Kirk just couldn't anymore. So
yeah.
I mean, and you go back to Penix in the college football playoff last year, that semifinal game, just awesome. Like, I mean, everybody made fun of the Falcons for that draft pick, and I did too on draft night. But as the offseason went on, you kind of understand it a little bit more that, hey, why not double up at quarterback? It's so important to get it right. What's wrong with drafting a guy you really, really believe in? I think the Falcons really believed in this kid, and are pretty happy to have him now, I'm going to tell you that.
Yeah, and so what? Your cap gets messed up for a year if you have a quarterback. Doesn't matter. Washington.
Yeah, as long as you get it right.
Washington has a quarterback.
You get the final answer on the test, right?
Yeah, exactly. Talking with our friend Frank Schwab from Yahoo Sports. You can follow him at Yahoo Schwab, SCHWAB. If you do want to get on the radio and bash Kirk Cousins, DC ain't the worst town for it. That's all I'm saying.
I know. Right, yeah, I've been thinking about that. Yeah.
No, but. You've written a lot about the MVP race, and I think by all accounts it's Lamar versus Josh Allen, and I honestly think if it goes to Allen, who's been deserving, it's because people are just tired of it going to Lamar. I think you see this in sports, right? Like, the only reason anybody but MJ won an MVP is because people just got tired of MJ winning it. I think that's happened with Mahomes, why nobody's rooting for the Chiefs anymore.
I'm based in Denver. Joel Embiid didn't deserve MVP 2 years ago. They just were sick of voting for Jokic.
True.
Right. Totally. You just see it happen. And it's kind of a sad indictment on the media, which we're all a part of, frankly. I don't have a vote. If I did, I think you just got to base it on the season that's unfolding rather than the history prior to it. But what do you think happens with the MVP award?
I will push back. I disagree. Like, look, there is some voter fatigue involved with, hey, let's give it to somebody new. Like, that's just kind of human nature. But yeah. I don't think it would be as egregious as MJ not winning MVP every year in the 90s, which he should have. I think Josh Allen's perfectly deserving. I do. I don't have a problem. This is one of the few, and I just tweeted this out. Like, this is one of the actual MVP races. We talk about it, like we talk up guys, oh, this guy can win MVP when really he has no chance, and then Lamar gets 49 votes or whatever. I think this one's going to be like 27 votes for one guy, 22 for another, and then some rando is going to vote for Saquon Barkley. Like, it's going to be that right. close this year, and I'm fine with either one. I really am. It's one of the rare times where I can't sit here and tell you this, I think, is the right answer for MVP. I'm fine with Josh Allen. Like, they took away Stephon Diggs from him. They said, we're trading Stephon Diggs because you're just going to carry the more of the load. And he's responded so well to that. So I don't have a problem with Josh Allen's been Superman all year. If you watch the games, you know he's playing at a really, really high level. But great. Lamar Jackson, the greatest rushing quarterback of all time, is about ready to set the all-time single-season passer rating record. Like, how do you deny him MVP if he does that? He's at 121.6. Aaron Rodgers' record is 122.5. So he's one more great game to basically have the best passing season of all time as far as efficiency goes. How do you deny him? I don't know. I don't know the right answer. I think that, you know, we saw, like, you know, Barry Sanders and Brett Favre split an MVP once upon a time, and Steve McNair and Peyton Manning did once upon a time. If these two guys somehow both ended up in a tie for first place in MVP, I'd be fine with it, actually. I think they both right. are so deserving, and I don't have a problem with either guy winning it.
Dude, I tend to agree with you. And what's even more remarkable is you mentioned Saquon, who's not going to win it, but at least deserves to be part of the conversation. Lamar's going to have his best ever passing year. I think this is his first. I don't want to say first ever, yeah. but I think, has he ever gone over 4,000 yards? He's going to.
I don't believe he has. And he's got what, he's missed 39 touchdowns after yesterday.
Dude, he's got 39 against four picks.
That's crazy. I know. And you know, he's doing this with, I mean, people talk about Derrick Henry like, oh, well, he's got Derrick Henry. It's easier for him. Well, that also means a lot less volume for yeah. to throw 39 TDs when Derrick Henry's taken up so many of them is actually
and only four picks.
The four picks
yeah,
as well.
Crazy.
Well, dude, I do think Baltimore has more help for Lamar. I think that offense is yes. better, more refined than what Allen is dealing with in Buffalo. But it shows the level both these guys are at that Joe Burrow is leading the NFL in passing yards, touchdowns. He has 39. He's tied with Lamar, 39 touchdowns. But he hasn't played yet this week, so that number is most yeah. likely to go up. He only has 8 picks on the year with an absurd So Burrow has one less game played than Lamar right now. They're tied in passing touchdowns. He's 300 passing yards ahead of him and has thrown the ball 125 times more and still only wow. has four more wow. interceptions. Yeah. Like, that's Burrow's crazy. Season is bananas, well, and we're just not even discussing
yeah, 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 and, awesome, and yeah. Frank, what the heck happened to Lou Anarumo's defense that we were all enamored by? They were the one that gives Kansas City all this trouble. And this year, if they had any semblance of defense, they'd be one of the top teams of the AFC.
Yeah, totally disappointing. I can't remember too many times a quarterback has played at an MVP level and not even made the playoffs. And the Bengals still have a shot to make the playoffs. It depends if the Broncos kind of collapse here. But, yeah, it's just shocking. Like, yeah, Lou Anarumo, remember 3 years ago, he was the guy. Like, he was, oh, hey, everybody's got to interview this guy. He might be the next head coach of the NFL. It just goes to show how quick it can come and go. And they've just – I just don't think they got great personnel. And – maybe people have figured out he has a very confusing scheme, right? Like, that's what he does. He tries to confuse quarterbacks. Well, you get enough film on it, you kind of figure it out after a little bit. So, yeah, totally disappointing that the Bengals aren't going to make the playoffs because they're just wasting one of the best years I've seen a quarterback play. Like, Joe Burrow's playing at that level that we really rarely see. And to miss the playoffs, if that happened, well, that would just be a debacle for the Bengals.
And this is the type of season where you have to make changes, right? Even it's probably not Zach Taylor, but are they going to move on from Anarumo?
I assume so. Like, I don't know. Let's say they miss the playoffs, right? Because if they make it, it's just a different thing, right?
Yeah,
we all know.
Yeah, yeah.
If they miss the playoffs, I don't know how you don't fire Anarumo. Like, even if I hate moves done just to make moves, right? Like, you're always asking, like, well, are we going to get somebody better or not? But I think a season like that, you almost have to do it. You almost have to say, we can't look Joe Burrow in the eye if we don't make some major changes. He plays that well and not even make the playoffs. It would just be harsh. And I think they would have to change defensive coordinators and just to signal to everybody that you know, it's not acceptable to waste Joe Burrow like this.
It is remarkable, and I think I don't blame Anna Romo at all. I think it's ownership. I mean, you look at the talent that has left that organization.
Yeah.
I mean, look at what – I mean, hell, Washington's going to see him. Jesse Bates is such a stud, and just the amount of talent drain they've lost there. Go ahead, Frank.
And they're about ready to lose one or two of their receivers, too.
I think Higgins might be here.
Yeah, I think that's what's actually that's exactly what I think is going to happen. I think the Bengals should re-sign T. Higgins. I do. Like, just go all in. Just, hey, this is what makes us special, is having these two receivers with this quarterback. But we all know this, the Bengals, they're not going to do it. Yeah. I can't even tell you for sure they're going to end up re-signing Ja'Marr Chase, because they're just that cheap. Like, the Ja'Marr Chase contract was one of the easiest in the NFL. Like, okay, you're basically Justin Jefferson. This is what Justin Jefferson got. Here you go. Like, that was so easy, and they fumbled that, and it cost themselves millions of dollars along the way.
Totally. It's been remarkable to watch. Frank, thank you for the time as always, man. Appreciate you.
Absolutely, guys. Enjoy the games this weekend.
All right. That's our guy, Frank Schwab from Yahoo Sports. Give him a follow at Yahoo Schwab. Joe Witt, Jr., Commanders defense coordinator, next. Ah, the peaceful sounds of the Beastie Boys. Commanders defensive coordinator, Joe Witt, would probably like this song, frankly. He's a badass. This is a badass song. Commanders defense coordinator, Joe Witt, addressing the media.
That when he did his workout, I was like, okay, he's a little small. You know, and I like big guys. I don't like, you know, a bunch of little guys, but he plays thick and heavy, and he's right where he needs to be. He throw hands. He's a lot like, when I talk about consistency and being where you're supposed to be, like I talk about DA, that's what Sheldon is. And he's very smart. You could tell him. He understands the blocking schemes and what's coming at him, the lean and the balance of the offensive lineman. If it's run pass, he gets all that. And so he's been a very important part to our defense.
I don't remember if I asked you this before, so I'm going to ask it again. But okay, from a defensive perspective, you guys go against Jaden. You guys know Jaden as well as anybody. What makes him so hard to break down when he's on the move?
When he's on the move?
Yeah. Like, when he's scrambling, I mean, he can force so many missed tackles. What?
Well, because he's really fast. Like, he's probably one of the faster guys on the team. And so as you're taking an angle, if you take an angle to actually go get him, he has a one-step cut where he can get vertical really quick. And so if you don't have multiple bodies going at him, if he sees one person, like they talk about Kobe in basketball, you know, he was never worried about the first defender. He was worried about the help side and what's coming at him. That's where Jaden's eyes are when he's running. He's not worried about you tackling him. He's not going to tackle me. All right, now how do I beat him and make sure that this guy doesn't get me? That's what he does. And so he's hard. In practice, you know, I always say, you know, don't run them in practice because we can't hit them. So, you know, you're giving them 15 yards on a run in practice. Well, we can't even get close to them, so it's not even fair. But he makes us look the same way in practice, yes.
Is there a difference preparing for a first-year offensive coordinator than there is for somebody who has more experience?
Yeah, it's from the standpoint that, you know, you have a book on guys that you've seen, you know, years prior. With a guy that's his first year, you know, okay, you look at what he's done. Now, we're towards the end of the season, so it's a little bit easier. But you look at, okay, what did he do at the place before and his history, and then who was he really under for the majority of his time? You try to go back in the past and see what he's done in the past.
How much of what you've seen from Zach is more the Rams versus his own personal flavor on this offense?
It's not as much as the Rams as I thought it was going to be. I think it's a little bit more of him, you know. You know, Tampa is more Ramish than you know, more reductions and all. But I think he's put a little bit more of his own flavor on it.
Hey, Coach.
How you doing?
You talked a little bit about the Atlanta Falcons. Could you talk a little bit more about what you see that they do really well on the offense with a new quarterback in there, but their overall offense?
Well, I think from the pass game standpoint, they make the reads similar. They're balanced for the quarterback. And so the progression, if it's left to right, if it's away from the back or to the back, it's very easy for the quarterback to get through his progressions. In the run game, you know, they do a good job of getting the ball on the edge. I mean, they have really good blockers. They really get to the second level quickly, and they're able to get the runner onto the second level.
And you talked about Frankie Louvu, good game last week, but what have you seen in just week after week as far as just what he does?
Well, first, he's, like I've said from day one, he's the type of player that we wanted to build this defense around. He's a running, hit, high-energy man. He's everything that this defense really wants to be about. Frankie is a great teammate. All right, he's a leader. He doesn't say a whole bunch of, you know, he doesn't say anything. He just runs and plays with great emotion and does whatever we ask him to do. He's right there. You know, Bobby's so even killed, and then you have Frankie that just is ready to run through the wall. So he's just what we stand for.
This might be kind of basic, but do you have to adjust the way that you call a defense or your plan playing a lefty quarterback?
You know, that's a good question. Some things we might do in reverse because of the progression of how they read it. But, you know, for the most part, we always do a hit chart of where the ball goes. And sometimes there's a right-hand quarterback that might throw it better to the left. That's rare, but there's sometimes that happens. And so, we see the hit chart, and if we want to tilt the coverage one way or another, that affects. I give you an example. We were playing when Michael Vick came back a long time ago. That game started with a right-hand quarterback, and he came in. He was at Philly, and I had Sam Shields on the opposite side of the quarterback's throwing hand. So when Vic came in, I still had Sam to the right side, and he was a rookie that year. And he gave up a touchdown. Well, I should have flipped him once he got in and put Tremont on that side over there, which I didn't, you know. But then it hit me like, okay, he's to the quarterback's throwing arm. So that's a very good point.
Just wondering about John and how you plug him back in whenever he gets back on the field and how he can help you at this stage.
Oh, I'm excited. You know, with the opportunity of getting him back, hopefully that happens when he gets back in. Well, you know, I'm sure he'll be on the pitch count, but I don't know what that number will be. I'll let the medical staff and AP and DQ, you know, lead that way. But he gives us just another veteran player, high pedigree player that can go in and give those quality snaps inside, that can get after the quarterback, push the pocket, be disruptive. So we're excited to get him back.
Appreciate it, Coach.
All right. Y'all have a great one now.
I think it was some interesting insight there about, never really thought of it, when you get a lefty quarterback in there, we always talk about, you know, catching punts from lefty punters or catching the ball from a lefty quarterback and that, how that's different. But flipping the defense depending upon if it's a righty or a lefty quarterback, I think is interesting. And you hear Witt talk about how, you know, he needed to flip back in the day when Michael Vick and flip, who was he saying, Sam Shields versus Tremont Williams. I think that's an interesting thing. So curious to see how that plays into it on Sunday. Maybe you have Drake London over on the left side more for a left-handed quarterback with Penix liking to throw the ball to the left side. I think that's an interesting point that he brought up. But, you know, I'm curious to see how this defense plays on Sunday when you're going up against the rookie quarterback. You're going up against somebody that's only making his second career start. It's something, you know, you don't have tons of tape on him. You're going to have to go back to a lot of what, because he didn't play much in preseason either. You're going to have to go back to a lot of what he did in college. But I think, JP, when you look at some of the weapons that this Atlanta offense has, you look at Bijan, you look at Kyle Pitts, you look at Drake London, you know, they've got the guys on paper, like we were talking about earlier. You know, they probably have the better unit overall, but you've got a guy in Penix making his second career start. I'm curious to see what this defense can do against a guy making that second career start, a defense that likes to play aggressive. We talked with Quan Martin last week about that, playing a little more aggressive and forcing the issue. I think it's a little bit different than what we've seen in the past, where facing a rookie quarterback when you're kind of letting them dictate versus when you're trying to dictate. I think that's how you can maybe dominate a game if a guy just gets a little confused, he's not trusting what he's seeing, and hopefully that can be the case on Sunday for Washington.
Go get him. You got a rookie quarterback in his second start. And what Atlanta did was really smart, and it was absolutely intentional, is they gave Penix his first start at home against the Giants. The Giants have quit. They can decide who they're firing up there. That's up to them. But that team has quit. Like, the team on the field is just awful, and then they're not matching effort to personnel. Like, everything, when it goes bad, I've seen it. Like, the milk's gone bad. That's the scene in the Giants locker room right now. So you let him start with that. And I just think this week is entirely different. It's his first road game. It might be raining. The weather might be crappy. We're hoping Amelia Draper comes on tomorrow and gives us a legit weather preview. Go get him. we sit in the press box in big situations, third and 13, and we wonder, you know, how would you play it? What would you do? We all kind of shoot this stuff out to each other. Go get him. Last week against New York, he was okay. He made some throws, but he was 18 to 27 for 200 yards with a pick. There's questions about his mobility. He's a lefty that can sling it. His ability to get deep is fantastic. Pressure, 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 pressure. That's, to me, that's the game plan defensively.
Yeah, I can't remember what game it was, but you go back and look at early, and I forget what game it was, but there was a certain quarterback. It might have been Deshaun Watson. It might have been someone else, but hit the dude early and then make it something where he's thinking about it. It speeds up his internal clock. He's not able to see everything. The eyes come down to the rush, and I think they've got the dudes to do it, right? Bring Luvu on different blitzes in that first quarter and just make it so he's always looking for four versus worrying about what he's going to do to get the ball to Drake London or how he's going to find a way to get Kyle Pitts open. He's worried about that rush. I agree 100%. Like, make this dude beat you. This dude have to operate at a high level. And if he does, you tip your cap, but you also have an offense that can go win it for you regardless. But play aggressively on Sunday. You can say that they don't have anything to lose. They do have a lot to lose. But play aggressively and force them to come out and win this thing offensively. Because I think if you're Washington's offense, I mean, you feel like you should be able to continue to do what you've done the last couple of weeks and put up 30 and really take some of that pressure off your defense. If you go after him, get to him early. Like, look, make him fold. He's a rookie quarterback. I like him a lot. Like you said, coming out of college, he's a heck of a player. He's played a lot of football. He hasn't played at this level, though. And he's seeing a new defense, and he's playing a team that actually has something to play for this week. Make him know it.
This is outrageous. This is a cool little life is good moment. The Lions are signing Teddy Bridgewater. Teddy Bridgewater didn't play this season, coached his alma mater in Florida high school football, won a state title, and is now catching on in Detroit for what could be a title run.
That's awesome.
That's pretty damn cool. You're going to hear from Cliff Kingsbury when we come back. It's B. Mitch and Finley.
Welcome back, B. Mitch and Finley. Toby Altizer in with JP today. We just heard from defensive coordinator Joe Witt Jr. just a couple of minutes ago. Now let's go out to the podium once again and hear from offensive coordinator Cliff Kingsbury.
So they played at a much higher level recently, and there's no doubt they're doing a great job against the run, but this week's about us and getting better in that department.
I know you don't want to win that way, kind of not be able to run the ball effectively with the running backs, but is that something you can do consistently?
If number five is healthy, yes. You know, I mean, in this league, you're going to have to run it at some point, particularly going to the NFC. You look at some of the teams, some of the places you may have to play. Yeah.
And we've asked you this before, but Jaden's consistency, particularly at the end of games, I know you saw it like on the tape in college and you've seen it a couple times this year, but is it surprising or what is the key for like it to keep happening?
I think he just, his belief in himself and his ability just in those moments to just really lock in and focus, and he's as good as I've ever been around as far as just playing the next play. Like he doesn't let much phase him. He knows the work he's put in during the week, and he focuses on that. And so it's like the result is what it is, and he can process it and move forward. And for a young guy to be able to handle that with all he has going on has been really impressive.
What does David Blau bring to the quarterback's room? How does he help you?
Yeah, he's been phenomenal. He's one of the smartest quarterbacks I've ever been around. I just had him a little bit in Arizona, and he picked up the offense and like – 5 days, and we had him starting a couple days later, and executed at a really high level. And I was just his kind of steady habits, how he interacted with other players, you know, how he communicated with coaches. I always thought like this guy would be a phenomenal coach, and his experience with the young quarterbacks, being so young and so recently a part of the game, I think that carries a lot of weight with those guys. Like he can share his experiences, a guy who maximized everything he was to get where he's at, and it hits home. And so he's been a great voice in that room. And then for me, some of the blind spots I have, or Tavita has, you know, having just come out of that role as a backup or having started games, it just carries a lot of weight when he speaks.
This was not totally focused on offense, but you're around Jaden so much. You've seen these guys interact. His relationship with Bobby Wagner, how have you kind of seen that grow? I mean, it seems like they're always just, you know, taking shots at each other.
Yeah, they
playfully,
are. A lot of trash talking. But I think Jaden, he has great self-awareness, great situation awareness. He knows, like, that's what greatness looks like, the level he's done it at for so many years, how he carries himself, how he studies, you know, how he plays the game. And that's, I know, a goal of Jaden's is to be known for a guy who does it the right way on and off the field, and there's no better role model to have in your locker room than Bobby.
And you talk about with the run game in practice. What little things are happening in the game that you think could be cleared up by practice?
Yeah, I think just a little bit too much paralysis by overanalysis. You know, if you're going to make a mistake, we got to make it full speed. It's the picture is going to change. Defense are going to do different things, show different fronts. But I feel like there's some hesitation. We've got a bunch of smart guys up there that have done a great job sorting things out. But I feel like we're not just firing and we're kind of waiting at this point. And it's like, hey, we're going to cut it loose, play downhill. If we make a mistake, we'll go full speed and let the backs play off of it.
And then how has Ben Sinnott developed in both roles, pass catcher and blocker?
Yeah, he's, you know, a very skilled football player, there's no doubt. I think the blocking aspect is something that we're continuing to work on with him. You know, it's a different speed, different level of play, but he's made big strides in that area, and we'll continue to bring him along. You know, he's behind one of the greatest pass catching tight ends in the history of the league, and so that keeps a few reps off his plate, but we're very pleased with, you know, his progress so far.
I seem to remember going back even to the preseason, you seem to be with Jaden's understanding of what he's seeing is leadership, that you were pretty willing to say, hey, if you see something, go for it. What was it about his ability to see things, to lead out there, that for you was like, okay, we're good here?
Yeah, just early on, I mean, when he said something and had information, it was spot on. You know, I mean, he nailed it, and he saw coverages and he saw releases and he saw, hey, we got this guy because of this. And so it didn't take many plays into like rookie minicamp. I was like, all right, this guy, he's gonna be up here, as far as recognizing what he's seeing and being able to communicate like that. And that's huge for coaches to be able to coach off that and be able to help through that, because there are guys who will come up with the reasons why this wasn't over, I thought this, right? And he just will say it as it is, and he's the first one to say my bad if he screws something up too. So that gains a lot of trust with the coaching staff.
And I know that the teaching aspect for him is going to be every day, and not just for this year, but for the years to come. But at this point in the year, when you've got down to two regular season games and maybe more, is it more about focusing on improving what you're doing already versus throwing in different stuff that maybe ultimately you want that, but maybe it's a little late in the season for that?
Yeah, I think with him right now, it's just making sure we don't get bored with doing the proper footwork and the correct read and taking the right check down, which I thought he did a tremendous job avoiding sacks, getting the ball out of his hand, throwing it away last week. Like, don't get bored with making the routine play. I mean, he can do the Superman stuff when it's called for, and he does, but I think that's the biggest deal. Stay within yourself, stay within the system, and when it's time to make those plays, you're going to make those plays. So he did a really nice job last week, and we just got to stay right there with it.
Apologies for one more Jaden question.
No, they're all good, baby. Keep them coming. I can talk about them all day.
On the part about him putting things behind him quickly, can we go back to last week for a moment? He threw an interception late in the game. It was really one of the first times late. Mm-hmm. Fifth turnover, late in the game. It's a mistake, could have lost the game. Was there anything in that moment you can share with us about his demeanor, what was said, to turn back around, get back on the field, and go win the game?
Yeah, he doesn't change at all on that stuff. You could just tell from looking his eye, if we get the ball back, we're gonna go win it. And that was like his feel. That's, you know, one of the most brazen throws he's probably made, if you will. And I think he was just trying to make a play. But yeah, he reset, and there was no like, oh, we lost the game, or that's on me. I was like, all right, if we get the ball back, I'm gonna go win it. And that's what the sideline felt, and his teammates felt, and his coaches felt. Yeah, if you're gonna do that, you gotta complete it. that's really it. It's like, you can't high five him for all the ones that work and then crush him for the one that doesn't. You know, I understood it was third and long, critical situation, he's trying to make a play. You know, that was a bit ambitious of a throw, but yeah, it's like, hey, if you're gonna throw that one, gotta make it work, dog, and you move forward. I would say just he's as good a player as is, he's an even better person. Like, towards his teammates, his coaches, like watching this Christmas stuff, like, he's a phenomenal human being above all else. And I didn't know him on that level. You know, I knew the tape. I was like, this is as good as I've seen, progressing through and making plays with his feet. But he is a tremendous person. It was not. That was a Dave Blau play that he brought with him. And Jamison really sets it high, and Zach comes underneath, and Zach's the main target. But Friday practice, we repped that. Story of the second play, we ended practice with a safe two-point conversion. And at the time, I'm like, who does a safe two-point conversion? Let's just throw it, whatever. But it's a run play. you're up one. Hopefully they don't pick it off and run it back. And so that situation came up exactly like it did on Friday. So shout out DQ. And then Dave Gardner, our situational guy, manifested it. I'm telling you. Yeah, it's not that extreme, but yeah, something like that. Thank y'all.
Appreciate it.
Cliff Kingsbury, man. That's a smooth cat. So is Toby Altizer. I'm kind of sandpaper-ish. Here's what we're going to do. Appreciate the coordinators for stopping by. This Sirianni-Zach Ertz thing, we're finally getting some context to it. We're going to open the phone lines up, 800-636-1067, 800-636-1067. You're going to hear the Sirianni-Zach Ertz thing. Then we're going to let y'all talk. It is, after all, a Bleep You Thursday. And after everybody's been pent up in the house with their in-laws and their extended family for a week, might have plenty of bleeps to go around. Nobody go anywhere.